I think selling is all about confidence. So this is where artists fall down. They don't believe in what they do enough, and therefore they can't sell it because they're not being honest with themselves. And when you got something great, you know it, you feel it.
Plug into the mind of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. I have a good friend of mine that I've known for so many years, and I've seen him doing some incredible work in the realm of, you could say, enhanced breath work. Soma Breath, if you're not familiar with the brand, is an international movement that's blending this breath work with some other modern sciences and music to promote physical healing, emotional releases, and spiritual awakening. The founder behind it, Niraj Naik, is joining me. He's a former pharmacist that has really been able to apply somatic practices to heal himself as he was going through some chronic illnesses, and has been on a mission to bring this movement forward to the world to inspire so many people to find this healing and realize that there's so many ways that we can actually bring a much better way of well-being, seeing how we can evolve as a culture, as a society, and go beyond the conventional medicine. A pharmacist himself has seen what happens in the regular industry, and there's so much more that we can uncover. And what I'm excited to do in this conversation on Selling with Love is to see his journey of creating this movement, understanding the role that sales play in the creation of this organization, where it's going, and really inspiring anybody who is on a journey to bring a wellness practice as a light worker to be able to grow, succeed, and create an impact that truly motivates thousands, if not millions of people. We're going to talk about that and so much more with Niraj today. Niraj, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Great. Absolutely pleasure to be here. I was just thinking, actually, the first ever session I ever did on the Mind Valley stage, the person who introduced me on stage was you.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay. No. That takes me way back. Was this in Pula, Croatia?
Probably, yeah, something like that. It was a long time ago, like 7-8 years ago.
Oh my God. Well, I feel honored because I've participated in the session. I didn't realize I was kicking off the first stage on Mind
Valley. I've got a video of it somewhere. I've got a clip of you announcing me.
Give me a copy of that.
I'll send it to you.
I'll see how my introductions have evolved with you over the years, since that was 8 years ago. But I've heard your story before around you starting in the space of pharmacy, which is very much about like taking the magic pill, conventional, you know, medicine. And here you kind of went 180 and you're now in these somatic practices, which oftentimes you'd see people in the pharmacy world would not even like create space for that to be a reasonable remedy. And so I'd love to see, what did you discover and what got you motivated to go all in into making this your life's work?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Well, firstly, I never had intention to be a pharmacist. It's just one of those things that you have to do as an Indian child of Indian academic parents, right? And they want the best for you, so they go for safe, secure jobs. So I actually worked for 7 years as a community pharmacist. And that was where I really understood, like, for the first time, what the medical system is all about. And, you know, I was actually an entrepreneur. Before that, I ran like a massive music event. For 3 years, I ran a big rave, 2,000 people rave. And that's what I thought I was going to do. But then I got kicked into this line of work because I lost that business. And so I already had an entrepreneur's mind. So I was looking at this from a business perspective. I was like, the only way a pharmacy ever makes money is if people stay sick. Because if you cure people, they don't have any more customers. And the entire business model is all about like getting people as many prescriptions as possible, really. Like that's how it makes a lot of money. And the problem with it is that you're never fixing the root cause of the problem. So you're just maintaining a disease for as long as possible. You're never really solving that. Now, I didn't know that really that well until I actually got sick myself. So when I got a chronic autoimmune disease, or osteoarthritis, which is very stress related, you know, a lot of it was to do with just depression, a loss of hope, loss of faith, you know, being in the wrong kind of role for who I am. Like, you know, I was following the wrong path for who I'm built for. But it was also a gift. It was the best thing that happened. And it's where I realized that the medicines don't work, right? for chronic diseases like what I've got. They do work for some people in terms of like, they keep them comfortably numb. They may not suffer from the full-blown symptoms, but they never get rid of the disease. The disease becomes part of who they are. But I wanted a real cure. I don't want to just wear a nappy for the rest of my life or have my colon removed. So what happened was I actually ended up housebound for almost a year. And it was going through that where I was faced two choices, either have your colon removed or wear nappies for the rest of your life, be a guinea pig for a drug, hasn't been tested before, where they say God stands for gift of desperation. In my really desperate moment, then a dear friend of our family, Swami Yomkananda, who's a yoga teacher, I didn't know her that well then, but she heard about my situation and she actually told me that you actually have a gift. You can turn this around. You could actually be an amazing role model or maybe find a new career out of it. She actually had a similar story. She healed herself of heart disease from a young age and also cancer. So she knew all of this inside out. So she said to me, look, I can teach you the foundations of yoga, pranayama, Ayurveda. And this is all comes from your own culture. And I had to like let go of my disbelief on the whole thing because Indian kids in England, like our generation, have been educated out of our culture. So we don't see yoga and breath work, pranayama, things like that as serious, like interventions for health. It's just something that your grandma does, right? And so I had to kind of let go of that and I had no other choice. So I just tried a few of the simple things she taught me from, firstly, it was the breathing techniques from pranayama. And it had such an immediate effect of turning off the stress. I couldn't believe it. It was like relieving pain, turning off stress. Symptoms were going down a bit. That it just put me down a rabbit hole to learn as much as I possibly could about these practices. And within a few months, I did turn it all around. And a lot of it was going back into these ancient breathing practices on pranayama, but also learning the Ayurvedic system of there's no one size fits all when it comes to healthcare. Like you have to find what works for you. We all have bio-individuality. So there was that aspect. And then what I actually created was a modality. I didn't even realize I'd done it. I did it by accident. The modality was a form of therapy where you can use the breath to change your state of consciousness. You can get into altered states where you can speak directly to the unconscious mind through the right use of visualizations and affirmations and kind of like ancient mantras. That's how they work. So I came up with my own concept of based on this ancient method of speaking to the unconscious mind in a trance state, which actually was talked a lot about in this book called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Dr. Joseph Murphy. He was actually a pharmacist who brought the Christian science with Ayurveda and Eastern philosophy together. And he came up with this scientific prayers concept. So I made my own version of that. And what was the real missing piece to making this all work really effectively was the music. And that's where I got my new passion again for music and being creative. So that's actually where I turned my passion for making music, because I used to run these raves and perform and all that, into a modality for healing. So first, what it is a sequence of pranayama techniques that gets you into this altered state. But those techniques also work on an internal physical level, upgrading the mitochondria, how we produce energy in the body. Everything is energy, right? So if we manipulate the energy in the body, we optimize how we produce energy, it has a remarkable effect over all of your overall health. So these ancient techniques that very few people knew about back then, that combined with this form of therapy is what within a few months with lifestyle changes got me back to full health. And then I started to share it with other people. First for free on places like YouTube. And I got really good results just sharing it with other people. Because everyone was like wondering, like, how do you do this? So how do you heal yourself? So then one thing led to another and I created an online course. And then I got in with the Mind Valley community. Along the way, I met a guy called Wim Hof. And I realized he was doing very similar stuff. So I was like, he's the great front man for this. I just worked with him because I was never like a front man kind of guy. I was always behind the scenes. I didn't ever imagine I'd be doing what I'm doing now, to be honest. So I'm quite good at the entrepreneurial side, the business side. So I was like, I'm going to use Wim because he's an amazing example of what's human potential. And he's a crazy character and he has all these world records. And like his story of mine is quite good, goes quite well together. And we actually did a few big events together. And that's actually what I thought I was going to do. But then as I got more into the whole world of Tantra and other transformational techniques and learning so many other pharmacy of different breathing techniques, that I realized actually there's so much more to this. I started to do my own breath sessions, kind of ways to, they're not just for healing yourself, they're more for like self-discovery, like reaching these peak ecstatic states. It combined a lot of stuff I was learning in Tantra with these breath practices and music. And that led to me running like my own festival. So I kind of created my own events I used to do back in the raver days, but now in a more conscious way. And I was like, there's so much to this. And people kept coming up to me saying, you're really good at the facilitating. Can you teach me how to do this? So after a lot of being pushed into, you know, this facilitation side and a lot of people requesting me to teach them how to do this, I decided I'm just going to create my own school. And that's Soma Breath, where it's more of a pharmacy breathing techniques. You don't have to jump in ice baths if you don't want. You know, you don't even have to jump on a yoga mat if you don't want. There's a lot of different techniques that you can find that work for you, wherever you are, wherever state, situation you're in. And I wanted to make something a lot more functional, that's fun and effective, that demystifies all of this ancient knowledge and puts it into a system that is really easy to understand, scientifically sound as well. And so that's what I now train instructors to do. We've got few thousand instructors now around the world, and it's been an amazing experience like to do this. I'm so glad I stepped into doing this, because otherwise I would have been always the behind the scenes guy, and to be honest, it's way more fun being out there in the front. Yeah.
Niraj, thank you for taking a second to walk us through that path. And what I wanted to do is kind of go into the space of mindset, because what I've noticed is that you've looked at every single event that happened to you, and you kind of combined it into making you be on this path that seemed perfect for you and the kind of purpose you have to bring this forward. Whereas with a different mindset, you could have been, oh, you know, I've been into business with music. I failed. I should not be touching that business anymore. I was in the space of pharmacy. This is the path my parents wanted. I just need to do that. You had this illness. You could have accepted that this is just the way things are. There's nothing more to do that. But instead, it seems like every single one of those steps has become a foundational pillar that has prepared you to be the exact perfect person to be leading this movement, being the front man and doing this. And so my question to you is, like, was there any particular attention you've ever paid to mindset throughout this journey? Did it simply emerge? Like, I'd be very curious what got you into this attitude that you kept always looking at this as opportunities for the next step.
Yeah, I like reflecting a lot and joining dots. And there was a Steve Jobs speech actually that he gave at the end of one of his graduation at Stanford or something, or Harvard. He did a, can't remember which one. And he talks all about the importance of joining the dots, because you never know, like, you know, what's going to lead you to the next destination. And bad things lead to good things lead to bad things. So there's never a good or bad thing. They're all just events, right? With significant events. And everything shapes your reality in a way, right? That's happened to you before. And so I'm an artist by nature. That's my real, like, you know, who I am, my truth. And I believe there's like a few different types of people in the world. There's the ones who follow orders. They're the ones who give orders. And then there's ones who create the orders, right? I can never be the person who just follows orders, because I always see that things are wrong, right? I'm too rebellious to just be the one who follows the orders. And I tried that. As a pharmacist, you're just following orders. That's all you do. Sucks, right? And I'm also not the one who just gives out orders without thinking about it, because that's the pharmacist's job too. You're ordering people around and you're managing things, and that's not who I am. I'm much better as being the actual creator. But not everyone can be that. Not everyone has that. And I see this as a big mistake, is that people try and be these creative entrepreneurs when they don't have that gift yet. Or maybe it can be unlocked, you know. Some people can maybe unlock it because it's been like masked because of their background and upbringing and educational system, which kind of was my problem actually. But I do find that the creatives, the real true creatives, they break free no matter what circumstance. And they either end up on the street homeless or they make something great, right? So, and it's a big risk, huge risk to be a creative person. But now, in this day and age, it's never been a better time to be a creative because all of the technical stuff can be easily automated and you can hire really smart people to do that stuff. And it can give you a lot more time and freedom to be creative. And there's a lot of the technical stuff. Now AI can help streamline and make it faster. So you can even be more creative, right? And you can just think creatively rather than get bogged down by the technicals. So I think it's an amazing time right now to be a creator, right? But you have to be honest, not everyone has it. And it's a very scary path to go down, right? To be so, you know, what I've tried to create with Soma Breath is a system where it kind of helps all different types of personalities, right? You can be very creative with this. If you want to be an artist, you can be creative. You don't have to stick to absolutely all the rules that we put down. You get this freedom. And that's why I call our instructors more like transformational artists, because they're really like blending in music, they're creating their own soundscapes, they're guiding sessions, they're recording things. You know, they're being entrepreneurial. There's so much room for growth and creativity as a transformational coach or an artist and so on. But then you can also just use our ready-made protocols. So if you're somebody who rather like just deliver something that's already proven and created and structured, we have that too. We have proven ready-made protocols that you can just, you know, transmit. And then we also have other techniques and tools that are more for, if you just want to be a consumer of what we do, if you just want to experience Soma Breath, we have an amazing system for that too. So I've tried to make Soma Breath something for everyone, you know, tap into everyone's skills and strengths.
I want to particularly poke at something you said about the artist being either a creative genius or ending up homeless. And so I need to go back to that because there's certain skills that I've noticed for a lot of the creative types usually miss, and sales is often one of them. I've often noticed that those who have an artistic lenience or preference see sales more likely as a necessary evil to do business. Like that's the mindset around what sales is. And I'd be curious if sales has ever been something you've struggled with or something you've embraced from the start.
I'm a natural salesman, man. I've had to be to fit in, to survive, because I was a small brown kid in the class. So I had to make myself more interesting to not get my head kicked in when I was younger. So it kind of was unlocked from that. But I have like a tenacity of not giving up. And in order for me, little scrawny little Indian kid, to be running a 2,000 people rave that normally gangsters would run, right? I had to really sell who I am. It was a funny story, but so I ran the entire thing off my phone in my bedroom at university. I was at university. And so people didn't know at the venue who I was until at the event, because I sounded like a scary, hard bastard on the phone, right? I put on a bit of an act. And what happened was the first event was so successful. The owner of the venue, well, he wasn't really even the owner. He was one of the main managers. They saw me, scrawny Indian guy shows up. They thought that they could like take advantage. They thought that I've built up the already what they need, they can just take it off us. So they're trying to steal it off me, right? So I remember when like they weren't going to pay us for the final amount, like I could have just given up there, right? But what I wanted was not just to get our money, but to secure a 3-year contract where they couldn't kick us out. So I remember like, I was like, this is it. This is my last chance. I have to go down and meet the owner of the venue. The owner was this, he had a reputation. He was a proper East London gangster, right? So I go down there, I remember like shitting bricks. And I go in there and I remember going, I'm late because there was loads of traffic. And I walk into this room and there's this guy, he's like on a swivel chair like this. He's facing the wall. And I walk in on the left, there's this huge man, like, I remember really well, with a massive, like, one of those bulldogs on his lap. I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck have I walked into here? And
this guy just spins around and goes, "You're late." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know." And I just went into flow state. I mean, as I was saying, "This is what you're going to do. This is how much you owe me. And this is what we're going to do for you." And he goes, "I like your style." Here, boom. And he just gave me the contract. I think selling is all about confidence. So this is where artists fall down. They don't believe in what they do enough. And therefore, they can't sell it because they're not being honest with themselves.
Right.
And when you got something great, you know it. You feel it when you create something great. When it's not, and you're not being honest, and you're fooling yourself into thinking it's great when it maybe not be, you don't have the will to sell it. It's like, I think artists, and this is why it's so hard to be a great artist, is you have to create something that you would die for, that you would stand up in a court of law and defend, right? Not every artist is willing to do what it takes to get to that point where they've created something that great, right? I had an amazing teacher. He was the manager of a band called Muse. He was one of my big mentors when I was going through this whole period. And a guy called Safdar Jaffrey. And Muse were arguably one of the biggest rock bands of our generation. And he also produced some of the biggest bands, right? Radiohead, Coldplay, those are other bands. So I would give him demos of my music. He really liked what I did. I would think it was good, but I know there was a side of me that just thinks it's good, it's not great. So he'd always be like, "Look, you have to be brutally honest with yourself. If you're not brutally honest, you're going to waste a lot of time and effort trying to sell something that's not great, you're not fully into, and you'll never sell it with conviction." And I think this is what selling is all about, is you have to get to a point where you believe in what you do so much that the thing sells itself. You don't even have to put much effort into selling it, right? And if you look at the best art, let's look at artwork, for example. The best artists, they don't have to try hard to sell it. They're amazing. What they're good at doing is setting themselves in a networking environment where they get to meet the right people who believe in them and they sell the thing for them, right? And the same thing goes with music. It's all about who you know, it's the connections you make and the rapport you build with people and how fun and easy you are to work with. That helps a lot. That helps me a lot in the music business in Ibiza. I'm very easygoing. I'm a good laugh to hang out with. So there's personal things that you have to work on. You have to kind of be a nice person to hang out with, right? If somebody wants to work with you long term, or you have to be so good that it doesn't matter that you're an arsehole, right? But that's what I'm saying, is that you have to create something of quality where it's the word of mouth sells the thing. That's what Soma Breath is built on, is the experience is so good that it sells itself, right? I don't have to try too hard to sell it. In fact, most of our sales comes from word of mouth, direct referrals, podcasts, people selling me, rather than us trying to spend loads of money on ads and stuff. Like the actual, most of our revenue comes from the fact that it's a piece of art, it's an art form. You know what I mean? And that's what people need to work on. That's my best tip for artists and creatives.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there on the confidence and about the fact that good isn't good enough. Greatness is what is required, and doing the work that's required to get to that level. And one of the things I know about your brand and what you've done with Soma is you've actually went and got the science to back the results that you were noticing anecdotally so that you could have a lot more of the scientific community behind your work. You've gathered so many of the stories, and a lot of that work isn't directly the work of enhancing the craft, but it's creating a lot of that social proof and the research. Like, you could almost say some of it could be considered boring work, or, this is a waste of time, I should just be working on my craft. But it feels so essential in a world that, you know, it's so hard to gain attention, trust is hard to come by. How much did you prioritize going to do those activities, and how much did it help you into bringing Soma to the next level?
Very good point. Well, here's the thing. So when you're doing transformational work, anything to do with health, healing, right, you've got to have tangible evidence in this day and age if you want to scale to the mainstream, right? I want to work with the mainstream. I don't want to just take care of the new age crystal healer segment of the world, because that's not a big segment. The biggest segment of the world are people who've been educated on left brain educational system, where science is quite important, maths and those subjects.
and they're being bombarded by science says this, trust the science, do that. They're already in this mindset of they must have scientific evidence if I'm going to believe it. So that's why I loved Wim Hof when he came around. He was all about the science, and he's somebody who'd die for his art, right? He climbed up Everest in his shorts just to prove to the world that you can do this, and he almost died doing it a few times, right? So like me as well, I was like, okay, I've healed myself from this disease, right? But I'm one story. I'm one anecdotal story. There are lots of other anecdotal stories, but it's hard for me to explain to the academic people, the doctors, through anecdotal evidence. So what I needed to do was actually deconstruct these techniques and really explain how they work, the mechanism. Because evidence is okay, right? Science is okay if there's some kind of correlation. It's okay. Great science is when there's, you can explain the mechanism, right? How does, like, you know, holding your breath for this long strengthen us from within? Why does it make us more efficient at breathing and oxygen and efficiency and things like that? So that was what I was focused on, because I wasn't actually satisfied with even the Wim Hof science on this. And so I just kept an open mind, and I'm a scientist as well by nature, a creative scientist. I went crazy deep to prove that this stuff works and I can explain the mechanism. And I went to train with a yogi doctor in the Himalayas who has a medical doctor facility. He's got published papers, he's written books, and he invited me in as a student, and he co-created the curriculum for Sarah Reth with me called Prakash Marsh. And he's the first person ever to give me a real understanding and the right science of the mechanism of how these breath retention, breath holding, and rhythmic breathing techniques work, why the sequence makes you so much better. And here's the thing about manifesting. If you have a big enough vision, right, and you do baby steps towards that dream, things start happening like magic you don't expect. So I didn't go out of my way to contact Cambridge University to say, hey, do you want to do this study? I didn't even know that they had a neuroscience department studying meditation and stuff like that. They actually reached out to me because, again, it's all about someone doing something great. There was a scientist called Jeff Tarrant who reached out to me as well. He loved the method. So he was, I want to study this. So he did a first study and he showed how we work similar in a way to psilocybin MDMA used to treat depression. And then Cambridge University got inspired by that and did a bigger study. Now, again, these are not phase one clinical trial type studies, but they're stepping stones towards that. But there's already so much evidence out there that exists on pranayama and breathing techniques and yoga and all this. It just never was put together in a logical fashion, which a medical doctor could understand and go, actually, this makes sense. I would give that to my patient to try. And that's the thing with pharmacy, right? Like pharmacists, well, especially the pharmacy reps, they would go to the doctor's surgery. I knew this from experience. They would go to a doctor's surgery and they would sell drugs to doctors. So the way they'll do it is with studies, making studies and showing how this drug does this and blah, blah, blah. And some of those studies are completely shenanigans. And then they'd also wine and dine doctors and take them on to Las Vegas and stuff like that. That's a whole other story. But I know that you need evidence. You need to show simple evidence, right? And do the work of the research for the doctors to make their life easier, to get them to understand stuff. So my target has been the medical community, the pharmacists, doctors out there, because they have leverage and impact. And in order to do that, because I put that out there as my thing, I want to get doctors prescribing this and being our instructors, what do I need? And all those things are starting to come to fruition now.
Niraj, there's something I notice about the steps that seem to unveil themselves in front of you, such as Cambridge reaching out to you, seem to follow a decision you've made that you're not playing small with this. Like, your mindset is about going mainstream. You're talking about having this becoming a top prescription for people's health. And what I've noticed, maybe a common path I've seen in people going in towards healing or light work, is that the vision is often very modest. The vision is like, I'd love to have, say, a small business, help a couple people, and I'd be content with that. And my question I'd love to ask you is, how much do you think it was beneficial for you to have this bigger vision to attract what you have now and build the momentum versus choosing a modest vision? And I'm seeing so many people struggle with even achieving the modest vision. And so those seem like two very different, you know, target points to set as a mindset. And one of them seems to be a lot more bringing resources towards you. So I'd love for you to speak on that and the benefits that you've had from having such a grand vision.
Yeah, so partly was going to this Tony Robbins event. So back in 2007, I went to UPW and he does this very interesting timeline sequence, like a 5-year dream life sequence or something, dream life targets. And I've always been a big thinker. That's just been my nature. Like, you know, with the raves, I was going to have even bigger raves and all this stuff. And my friends, you know, around me are all very ambitious people and they've all gone on and done great things individually. Me and one of my other friends happened to be at the Tony Robbins event. And so many things have manifested from that 5-year timeline that we set for ourselves back in 2007. Because that was the first time I heard Tony Robbins talk about, or anyone talk about diets, nutrition, and even breathing and meditation for prevention of disease. So after that, I started to test it out in the pharmacy. And so here's the thing, like, sometimes when you make a big vision, right, the universe will give you exactly what you need in order to grow to the level you need to be to get to that big goal. So first, like, what I wanted to do was, like, start healing patients in the pharmacy. I wasn't unwell yet. I was a broken person, like, spiritually. But this gave me a new lease of life. I wasn't chronically sick yet like I was. After this period is when it got back. And that's why the universe throws you little banners sometimes to put you into the right alignment. But what happened was I started to test out these dietary lifestyle changes in the pharmacy, right? At this point, my vision was just to get one result. If I can change one person's life in the pharmacy, God knows what that could scale to. So I just started to test out small, one or two patients. I tried to see if I can change their diet to see if that made an impact on the amount of medications they need. And those two patients ended up coming off quite a lot of drugs. And I saw a big correlation between processed foods and prescription meds. So then eventually I got really good at getting people off drugs. And I thought, like, this is my new lease of life. I'm going to create a healthy shopping list service. And I'm going to deliver, like, healthy foods to people's homes. And I'm going to partner with the biggest corporation in the UK and do this. And which actually all started to manifest. I ended up working in the head office of Asda, Walmart in the UK, carrying out this healthy shopping list service. I was like, wow, this manifesting shit really works. I remember reading The Secret at that point as well, around that Tony Robbins time. So it was all working, but here's the thing. This was all part of the universe's game to make me grow to a bigger level, because my vision was very big. And to be a face of a corporate head office, healthy shopping list service, is definitely not as big as where I really wanted to go, right? But in order to grow to that level, I needed a better story. And the best story came from me having everything taken away from me again and being given another disease, a disease that left me housebound for a year, where now I become the patient, where now I understand that it's not just diet and nutrition that helps people get healthy. It's so much deeper than that. And actually, it begins as simply as learning how to breathe properly. I'd only learned that, but there's only way I would ever have known that is if I got kicked out of this big project that I made to do this, to work on myself and heal myself. There's no way I would have ever got to where I am today if it wasn't for that. I'd be some, like, corporate kind of scumbag probably. And so, you know what I mean, instead. So, but the thing was, like, when I got sick, I actually lost all hope for humanity and myself and everything. I didn't care if I died at that point. It was so bad, like, the symptoms of the disease is so bad. And I'd lost so much weight. I was depressed. I was wearing a nappy. It was shit. So it was only when I cured myself that I suddenly remembered my big mission again. And I realized that, oh my God, this has all happened for an amazing reason. Now I have the most incredible story ever, where I'm a pharmacist healed himself from chronic illness without drugs and did it through his passion for music and Indian techniques. And he's Indian and all this. It was like too many perfect elements coming together. So then I set my sight much bigger. I was like, now let's take on the world. Now let's take on all of the corporations that are suppressing us from true health. And it's been an amazing journey since doing that.
Niraj, I'm so grateful you've came on the show and shared that journey and some of the lessons along the way. For those who aren't familiar, Soma Breath is such an incredible experience that we're going to make sure there's some links for you to go and experience it yourself. You're talking breath work, you're talking music, you're talking about guided experiences that truly bring healing, bring you feelings of bliss and so much more. And we're going to make sure that you go and discover more about that. And on top of that, I know that you're also creating a lot of career paths for those who are light workers that can use these techniques to enhance their practice, to even make it a primary practice for themselves, to become a part of the movement who is going to be shaking the world and having you at the top as an artist, as a visionary leader, and someone that has the perfect story to bring that forward and embracing sales in the process, I think makes it a very exciting journey and probably just the first steps of this journey. And so I look forward to hearing so much more about it. Niraj, before I let you go, I do have a question I ask everybody on the show, and I want to make sure to ask you as well, especially since I Love My Life is on your t-shirt. One of the questions we ask is, what does selling with love mean to you?
Yeah, that's a good one. So you said something about stories, right? So what I really like to do in Soma Breath is create incredible stories. So the transformational stories, the people who become instructors are generally people who've gone through transformation through Soma Breath. And those stories are so incredible, some of them, like the reversals of all kinds of chronic illnesses and just really from rock bottom transformations we've seen. And, you know, so firstly, like the best way to sell is when you really believe in something and you have a story to share, right? So what helps our instructors sell themselves and what they do with Soma Breath is if they've gone through Soma Breath and transformed themselves already. So this goes to anything. Like in order to really sell a product properly, I think, and with real credibility and authenticity, is to actually be a super fan of the product, right? First. So, but there are some salespeople who are amazing. They don't even know the product. They can still sell it. So some people will argue with me saying you don't need to understand. But if you really love the product, if you really are into that product and you really understand it and what it can do, for any other story that can tell people how it changed your life, that product, right? Then I think you're selling with this love for the product, right? And that comes through. People feel that it's infectious, it's authentic, it's real. Humans are very good at, you know, most of our communication comes like instinctively on an unconscious level. It's not just what the words people say. And some salespeople are very good at just bypassing that through the right words, and they use NLP and all this stuff. But I can spot that a mile away. I can tell a shitster sales rep a mile away. Not everyone's that in tune to be able to spot that, but I could feel it. But when somebody's really behind the product because they experienced the transformation themselves and they fall in love with it themselves, that's selling with love. That to me is what's true selling with love. And that's what I want all of our instructors to do. Like everyone who comes in to become a Soma Breath instructor, we encourage them. They must feel the benefits of this practice first. Otherwise, what's the point? Otherwise, why are you doing it?
Niraj, I love that you're bringing the product into a place of love first. I think that is a very key part in the transformation it brings to the people and the stories, I think, is all amazing. I can't wait to unravel more of this story because, again, as I've hinted towards, and I think speaking to you and knowing you, you're just at the beginning of the journey. And so I can't wait to hear more of Soma, the stories, the research, and everything that supports it. Thank you for bringing this movement forward. And I'm so excited to be a part of the promoters who bring this to the masses, because for anybody who is listening, this story itself is what happens when you do step into alignment with your own purpose. And when you have something that truly helps people, you're passionate about selling it, and you're able to create a model that allows you to scale and ripples, this is exactly what it looks like. It has doors opening for you. The universe seems to send everything your way, be perfectly aligned with what you're trying to achieve. And so have that trust. And Niraj, thank you for being an example for everyone else who is on that journey. This was a fantastic conversation. Very grateful to catch up with you, my friend.
Respect, brother. Thank you so much for that.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Expecting heavy downpours all day today.
You're a builder. You build. It's literally in your job title.
Woo, let's hit it.
A little rain isn't stopping you. Not today, not any day. Shouldn't your flashing tape be working through it all too? Only Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape's high-performance acrylic adhesive sticks, re-sticks, and stays stuck, even on the roughest surfaces in rain, snow, heat, and more. So you stay in control when it matters most. Show weather who's boss with Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape.